Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Wattier.
And I'm Tommy Welling, and you're listening to the Fasting for Life podcast.
This podcast is about using fasting as a tool to regain your health, achieve ultimate wellness, and live the life you truly deserve.
Each episode is a short conversation on a single topic with immediate actionable steps. We cover everything from fat loss and health and wellness to the science of lifestyle design.
We started Fasting for Life because of how fasting has transformed our lives, and we hope to share the tools that we have learned along the way. Want to hop on real quick, wish everyone a happy new year, and we are off and running here at Fasting for Life. Want to let you know about the first 7-day fasting lifestyle challenge. It's just a couple weeks away here, coming up on February 1st. I cannot believe it already. If you've started this year off with the best intentions, setting those resolutions, if you've been in the weight loss journey, you know about the new year, new you resolutions. And the fact is that they pretty much wear off by the end of the month. If you've been to the gym, you know that everybody comes out of the woodwork and the gyms get busy. And then the sad reality is by the end of the month, they're back to those old habits and those old lifestyles. And we don't want that for you. And by the way, I'm speaking from personal experience here. So that is why our challenge actually starts after the holidays have entered our rearview mirror and the holiday hangover has passed. February 1st, we are starting fresh with a 7-day fasting lifestyle challenge. And no, it is not a 7-day fast. We use intermittent fasting windows all the way up to 36 to 40 hour fasting windows. We have a beginner schedule, an advanced schedule, and it is going to be building those foundational, actionable habits on a day-to-day basis that can get you long-term sustainable results by adapting a fasting lifestyle. We don't want you to miss out. It's going to be absolutely incredible. It's going to be an incredible experience that we have in store for you. February 1st is the start date. You can go to the show notes, click the link for more information. And now onto today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome to the Fasting for Life podcast. My name is Dr. Scott Wattier, and I'm here as always with my good friend and colleague, Tommy Welling. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey Scott, how are you?
Doing fantastic, my friend. A happy new year to all of you hopping on the podcast episode this week. If we are not the first, then maybe we will be the last to wish you a happy new year, but we are happy regardless that you are here with us this week. Shout out to all the old school listeners as well. Yeah. The OGs, the Fasting for Life lifers on this journey with us to turn fasting into the sustainable health and weight loss solution that so many of us are looking for. If you're new, feel free to head back to episode 1, where we tell our story in about 30 minutes of why we found fasting, how we found fasting, and gives you some insight into our motivation to do what it is that we do day to day now in the weight loss and fasting world. So welcome in, welcome in. Incredible episode today, Tommy, if I do say so ourselves. I'm excited to unpack this article on the effects of low sugar diet combined with intermittent fasting. Not just that, but in the context of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Something that you and I will unpack as we share just a tiny bit of our journey on how those labs popped up for us, but they kind of just got swept under the rug. So, lots of fun stuff today, lots of encouragement coming your way, and a couple of announcements real quick. The new blueprint to fasting for fat loss is available. You can go to the show notes, click the link, download it. We'll send it over to you over the interwebs, put it in your email inbox. And then also the next 7-day fasting lifestyle challenge. If you want to accelerate your results, you've got the guide. You're going to leave the episode putting, you know, one or two of these things into action today, which is, as you hear in our opening, we want you to take something away every single episode that you can apply to your fasting life and to your health immediately. After you get the resource, you're going to have an opportunity. You can sign up for that challenge. Don't miss out. This is the first one of the year, and we've got some incredible stuff in store, Tommy. I can't believe like the holiday hangover is going away. The New Year's resolutioners are leaving the gyms. We're a few weeks into the year, and it feels like, I mean, do we even, like, what happened to 2022? So don't lose the momentum if you've got it, or if you're ready to make some change, we are here for you as well, Tommy. Hey.
Very cool.
Want to give a couple shout outs to some of the incredible reviews that we've gotten recently.
Yes.
We just hit a huge milestone. So from the bottom of our heart, if you've been listening to us for a while, you know that one of our goals is to pull back the curtain on blood sugar, diabetes, pre-diabetes, insulin resistance, its toll on health, shortening our life, decreasing our quality of life in the later decades. And we really want to empower each and every one of you that fasting can be an incredibly powerful tool to reverse these things, prevent these things, and never end up in a situation where you have to spend your time, all of your time, effort, energy, and finances on trying to get your health back. We want to prevent, we want to encourage, we want to pull you out of the matrix and empower you that you have control of your health, you have control of your weight. There is a way to do it. And fasting can be that solution for so many. And Tommy, that mark that we just hit is that 2 million downloads.
Yes.
Which is just, I never would have imagined. So a sincere thank you and appreciation and gratitude that y'all continue to listen, continue to follow, continue to share. So we want to give a shout out to a couple of the most recent, our favorite reviews, the 5-star reviews, before we hop into the effects of a low sugar diet combined with intermittent fasting in the context of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So Tommy, do you have those up in front of you? Do you want me to start?
Yes. Yes, I do. Absolutely. Rayanne, thank you for the 5-star review. Helpful podcast on fasting. I've been fasting for about a month and a half now, and I found this podcast to be a great encouragement and helps me understand more about fasting. Thank you for all the great information, Rayanne. You are very welcome. Thank you for the review too.
Yes, absolutely. WFNV. I wish we could know who these people are. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the best a daily conversation. I don't like to talk about fasting with my family, friends, or coworkers. If you've been listening for a while, you know the first two rules of fasting, just like the first two rules of Fight Club, if you're old enough to get that reference, are don't talk about fasting. And they say they listen daily because it feels like a conversation between you and I. Find myself agreeing with them and thinking, that happened to me too.
Right?
Absolutely. I have this podcast on and off throughout my day, the best. Thank you so much, WFNV. And appreciate you listening in. And that is exactly the essence of why we do this week in and week out. And these reviews tell the podcast gods that we're doing something of value. So much appreciated. Yes. We want to do one more shout out before we dive in.
Yeah, absolutely. Julie, new but very impressed. I've been hearing wonderful things about this duo from a PT who is a PhD. And I'm a previous nurse anesthetist. So we're both pretty selective. I joined the last 7-day challenge, got through it during the holidays with a 5-pound loss and a big drop in my cravings for unhealthy foods. Congrats, Julie. That's incredible. Yeah. I'm now in the 6-month VIP coaching and have consumed hours of the content. Super impressed with the content. But most of all, these men seem to really care and genuinely want to help people struggling. Absolutely, we do. And she says she learned so much in the process and so wish she had started months ago. Thanks, guys. You're welcome, Julie. Thank you for the trust and for the shout out. Appreciate it.
Yeah, the trust is a big thing. So if you're new and you're going, who are these guys, right? We're just normal folks just like you, but fasting transformed our lives. And that is our mission and vision now, is to take this message and continue to build on, you know, just the tried and true art of fasting, but most importantly, get y'all results. So with that being said, appreciate the shout outs. Feel free to drop us a review. We are getting going here with 2023, continuing that momentum. We ended the year with some talks about goals and, you know, mindset. And then, you know, we did a big year in review for the first episode of the year. The new resource is out, the blueprint to fasting for fat loss. We get the challenge coming up. So we are just launching. Oh, that was one of our episodes too, launching 2023 with this fasting lifestyle and this fasting energy. So this study is really cool, Tommy, from a personalized standpoint. And this just came out. I mean, we're talking like hot off the presses in, where is the date? I just had it in front of me.
Yeah, I got January 2023.
January 2023,
yep.
And it is going to be looking at the combination of decreasing your sugar intake and combining it with the standard beginner's first step into fasting, which is that intermittent fasting window, which is the 16-8 intermittent fasting window, which is where you have 16 hours of fasting. And a lot of those are, you know, in the evening through sleeping and then in the morning. So, you know, we stack the deck in our favor to get it, make it a little bit easier as you're getting into it. And then, you know, skipping breakfast, breaking your fast, using an 8-hour eating opportunity, or we like to say a nutrition window. And this randomized trial was specifically done in participants with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So I know you and I personally sharing not the whole story, but just a little piece is that as my blood work, as I was working out and, you know, doing CrossFit and counting calories and macros and tracking and hiring this specialized world-renowned nutritionist here in Houston and paid him about 10 grand. And I was labeled as a slow oxidizer. So I was doing 60 to 90 minutes on the rowing machine multiple times a week.
Yep.
And I would lose a little, but my body composition really wouldn't change. And I started doing this, you know, the Dolce and the working out and the different types of workouts and cycling through them and just trying it all.
Sure.
Over the over about a 7 year span, my blood work continued to tick up. Blood pressure, triglycerides, HDL was low, LDL was high, to the point where my wife showed some of this genetic testing that we had done once. She showed it to a friend of hers at the gym because we were friends with the owners at that point when they still owned, they no longer own the gym. So that's why I put it in the past tense. And she was like, is he like drinking beer and eating like fast food every day?
Right.
And she's like, no, I don't think so. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not stopping getting, you know, the triple cheeseburger and the whatever on the way home. No.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm eating like, yeah, we're food prepping and meal prepping and working out and all this stuff, right? But my liver enzymes were always something that showed up, right, on my lab work, but it was never something that was talked about. And
yeah,
I didn't discover the blood sugar, insulin underlying issue that I had because my blood glucose and A1C was always in normal range. Yes, my fasting blood sugar was usually in the 90s, but it was like, oh, that's okay. That's fine. Right. Yeah, it was never, ever talked about, you know, and I looked like a strong man in the off season with the big old belly. I had, you know, I had a lot, you know, I could power lift the foundation, the house off the foundation at one
traps
point.
Traps up to your ears.
Right. Yeah. And the point was, it was like, okay, well, my numbers weren't getting any better. And what was the issue? So I never knew back then that those liver, those elevated liver enzymes were an indication that I had something going on with my energy, my body's ability to process, store, and burn fat, specifically around the liver as an organ or as a processing plant.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you know, if you think about it, the liver is central to everything that we do as far as removing blood sugar from the system, as well as burning through fat, metabolically shifting gears from sugar burning into fat burning into ketosis. So it's playing a vital role. So like we should be looking at it, and it's a shame that some of these things that tell us that there is a problem lurking and brewing underneath the surface are just kind of, like you said earlier, like kind of swept under the rug because you may not meet the definition or the strict definition of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. But at the same time, those ticking up enzymes that show up on a lot of our blood work, especially as we're putting on some weight and we're feeling a little bit worse and we're trying to diet, we're trying to get the weight off, but it's just not coming off. A lot of times these enzyme levels are ticking up. And this is, that's the definition. The definition is an actual excess fat building up in the liver, but not caused by alcohol or heavy alcohol use.
Right.
And it can just be there, kind of lurking and just kind of getting swept under the rug because there's not really too much to talk about. But at the same time, it's happening as that blood sugar was kind of ticking up too. And we know where that kind of ends up over time.
Yeah. And the diagnosis of, you know, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, you know, you're going to look at, you know, how do I say this? They're going to look at you as a whole, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to look at your health history, and they're going to, you know, look at the blood work, the ALT and the AST, medical history, overweight, obesity, insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes. You're going to hear a lot of the same things we talk about on all the other episodes. Triglycerides, abnormal levels of cholesterol, and an abnormal lipid profile, right? HDL is low, LDL is high, or metabolic syndrome. And they'll, you know, ask about other causes of liver disease. Do you have a family history? Do you drink? And then they'll do a physical exam, look at your body mass index. Do you have an enlarged liver? Do you have signs of insulin resistance, such as darkened skin patches, knuckles, elbows, knees, signs of cirrhosis?
Sure.
But if a lot of those come back negative, then, and you do the blood work and you have your ALT, your alanine aminotransferase, and your AST, which is your aspartate aminotransferase, and they're just slightly elevated and there's no other history or cirrhosis or additional major concern, then it's going to be rare in my experience of going through this and also hearing about it and hearing from other, a lot of the other people that have shared about their journey and their lab work and their conversations, like going to the next step for ultrasound or biopsy or CT scan or an MRI is not typically where that conversation goes. Normally it goes to blood pressure. Here's a cholesterol medication. Hey, you might want to think about, you know, eat less, move more kind of things.
Yeah.
If the risk isn't inherently there for you, if you fall into one of those high risk categories. So the frustrating thing is it just kind of like gets, you know, swept under the rug. And the reality is there was an article in the Journal of Clinical Gastroenterology and Hepatology. That's a mouthful. In December of 2022. So another recent article, and this is a meta-analysis. This thing is massive. 2019 global NAFLD, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease prevalence, a systematic review and meta-analysis, right? So they looked at the reason they're looking at this is because the increasing rates of obesity and type 2 diabetes mellitus may lead to the increase of prevalence of NAFLD. Well, they're very much related.
Right.
And in the process, in the liver of glycogenesis. Like, so there's a direct correlation there. And the reality is that this is kind of, how do we say it? Like the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But nobody really knows what to do with it or how to talk about it.
Yeah. Everyone just keeps jumping over it.
Right. It's like, oh, there's a giant pink elephant in the room. So this review wanted to look at determining the current and recent trends on the global and regional prevalence of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Mm-hmm. So systematic research, they looked through 17,244 articles. They found 245 eligible studies, 5.3 million individuals.
Wow.
Whoa. The global prevalence was 29.8% of the population.
Wow.
82 of these included articles that used ultrasound, not just elevated enzymes, but ultrasound to diagnose it, right? With the United States coming in the top spot at 36%. Or North America, I should say.
Yeah.
36% prevalence.
That's crazy.
And just South America and North America were one and two. So this was from 1991 to 2019. And the trend here, right, is it went from 22%, excuse me, to 37%.
Wow.
In that amount of time, 0.7% increase per year, 2.7% increase in South America per year, and then Europe at 1.1%. So the takeaway is that this is increasing, and why does it matter, right? Well, it matters because the majority of people, the number one reason why people die that have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is due to cardiovascular disease.
Mm.
Now we're getting into the connection between diabetes and cardiovascular disease and metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance and blood sugar issues.
Yeah. Wow.
So, hey, fasting fam, want to let you know about an incredible company that we've partnered with, AquaTrue.com. Promo code fasting for life to receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. These are not your old school pitcher filters or your refrigerator filters. We're talking about a proprietary four-stage reverse osmosis purification process. Their countertop purifiers work with no installation or plumbing, which if you've priced those whole home water filtration systems, you know exactly what I'm talking about. These incredible countertop versions, they do have one under sink mounting model as well, but they remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, like I mentioned, and they're specifically designed to combat this new group of chemicals that the Environmental Working Group has done a deep dive on, these forever chemicals called PFAS or PFASs. These are in 45% of our U.S. tap water. 45%. These things can lead to endocrine system disruption, certain types of cancers, liver toxicity. And I'm so glad that there's now a countertop affordable version of this incredible technology. So as we fast, we know that water, outside of a little black coffee and tea, is the only thing that we drink. So if we're trying to get the biggest bang for our buck, we're trying to increase autophagy, allow our bodies to heal, shed the weight, get healthy, reverse disease, then why not give it the absolute best quality water that you can? So AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. It even makes a great gift, like I mentioned, my aunt and uncle. Today, as one of our loyal listeners, if you support them, you're supporting us. You're going to get 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to AquaTrue.com, that's AquaTRU.com, and enter code FASTING FOR LIFE, FASTINGFORLIFE. That's 20% off any of the AquaTrue water purifiers at AquaTrue.com. if this is as high as it is, then how do we prevent or reverse or undo this clogged up liver function? Because the liver is absolutely so important. It is not just a filter. Mm-hmm. It is right. A living, breathing, metabolic functioning necessity that you need to have in your system. So just looking at it, like risk factors, low HDL, type 2 diabetes, high BMI, age, hypertension, waist circumference, right? All of these things that if you are struggling to lose weight, you typically have either on your radar or are already in that category.
Yeah. And I feel like an important piece of the puzzle that was missing for me for a long time that I just don't hear talked about very often is the fact that the liver is responsible for actually metabolizing most of the fructose and a lot of the sugar that actually comes through the body. So the connection begins with what we have to do with the fructose, especially that we bring in, which is why high fructose corn syrup is such a like an easy target, but also such a powerful part of the problem here. Because when that comes into the liver is forced to actually metabolize that. And then if we already have a full liver, like we're glycogen full, so we're basically eating at or a little bit above our caloric needs, or our insulin levels are a little bit higher than they should be. So it becomes a little harder to tap into the stored fuel that we have in our liver. When we're doing that, then each additional gram of sugar, especially of fructose that comes in, is forced to actually be deposited as little fat droplets, mostly as visceral fat right around the heart and the vital organs. And then now we have the strong connection between sugar coming in and then cardiometabolic disease, right? That is a huge part of cognitive dissonance for most of us. Most of us just don't think about that or don't understand it, or we haven't heard that before to be able to make those connections.
I want to share where the sources of the majority of the fructose comes from. But first, this is from the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases, so the NIDDK. Mm-hmm. And it says here that either if you have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease or NASH, which is a steatosis, I always mess up the pronunciation of this, non-alcoholic steatohepatitis. So what they say here is weight loss can reduce fat, inflammation, and fibrosis or scarring, right? So if you're overweight or obese, losing weight. Now, some of you are going, yeah, I know, I'm trying. Losing at least 3 to 5% of your body weight can reduce fat in the liver. You may need to lose up to 7 to 10. Yep. So we're going to share some stuff from this article and the changes that we saw in a 12-week period. Just 12 weeks, right? Yep. So just remember those numbers, okay? They're going to be close, if I recall correctly. Tommy has those stats, but I'm pretty sure that we're in the ballpark. So hopefully I'm not overpromising.
I had to lose about 15% of my body weight before I saw those enzymes drop. The ones that weren't talked about whenever they actually came up in my blood work.
I have to look at that. I'm not sure. Yeah. You know, so let's talk about where this stuff comes from. So there was a study that was, you know, looked at. It was an article in Medical News Today. It said high fructose corn syrup intake linked to liver disease. And it was looking at the link between the high fructose corn syrups, NAFLD. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we know the risk factors. We already mentioned those. It was looking at exploring the consumption rates and hopefully helping researchers identify the reasons behind different ethnic groups. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at the data analysis, and this came from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, the NHANES, in 2017 and 18. And they looked at about 3,300 folks, and 31% were in the moderate fructose consumption group and 35% were in the high consumption group. And it looked at Mexican-Americans, non-Hispanic blacks, and non-Hispanic whites as the three main groups. Okay. And fructose consumption came in various sources. So if you think of fructose, right, most people think, well, fruit and then sodas, right?
Sure.
Soft drinks.
Yeah.
Like direct sources of sugar, candy. Well, 29% from baked goods, pasta, and other grains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
28% from fruits and items containing fruit or fake fruit. Like, oh, this juice contains 10% juice from concentrate, right? 16% from sweeteners, condiments, and sauces.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Oh, I just saw a couple of posts about somebody using ketchup like with a continuous glucose monitor and the spikes that they saw from different condiments like ketchup. I mean,
yeah, ketchup was a huge one. That's hard. Right. That's right.
Yeah.
And then 16% from sodas. Okay. So if we've got the wrong target here, then the results may not match, right? If we're just, you know, thinking we're doing the right thing and it's not helping. I mean, if that sounds familiar, you know, we shared a little bit about our story here just a few minutes ago, right?
Yeah.
So what we want to look at with the actual effects of the study is that, you know, we've talked about the stats, we've talked about the trends. We know that NAFLD is strongly associated with lack of movement and unhealthy hypercaloric diets. Mm-hmm. But is there something small that we can change, right? Reducing, and we're not saying all forms of carbohydrates, but specifically fructose versus glucose. Sure. Because fructose, how did you word it, Tommy? It's like gas on the fire. Like, what did you say?
Yeah, I mean, it's a major piece of that. I mean, it's a major like wrench being thrown into the system. I don't know exactly what I said, but I mean,
yeah, I don't remember.
Essentially, it's the accelerant for sure.
Yeah, it's an accelerant. That's the word I was looking for, an accelerant, right? Yeah. So I didn't mean to tee up there and then not exactly give you what I was looking for. I was like, something, right? So when we're looking at this study, you know, excessive energy intake is the primary driver of development of NAFLD, but evidence suggests that certain sources of energy, such as sugar, right, which we're talking about, which we just mentioned, may especially promote increases in liver fat.
Yeah.
Now, we just talked about the sources of most of them. So the cornerstone of treatment is lifestyle modification with the aim of achieving significant weight loss. So we shared some numbers there, right? 3 to 5, maybe 7 to 10, depending on how far down the rabbit hole you are.
Yeah.
So time-restricted eating, which incorporates extended periods of daily fasting, right? The most common is that 8-hour window, followed by 16 hours of fasting, is increasing in popularity, right? So is the low sugar diet combined with TRE beneficial? And this 12-week randomized trial was 45 participants, so a smaller study, but I love that it was 42-year-olds, 60% men, 40% women. We're starting to see a lot more studies with fasting, and we just did that last week's episode that talked about the 4 and 6 hour windows. And that was the majority of those women were on the borderline of obesity. And it was the majority of women in that study.
Yeah.
Which was really cool to see, right?
Yeah.
So the prescribed diets were isocaloric, 30% of total daily energy from fat, 15 protein, which in these studies, I would love to see, how about we prioritize protein and fat and decrease the carbs? Okay.
Right.
I know for this one, they couldn't do that, but it's always so interesting to me that protein is so low. So 30% fat, 15% protein, 55% carbohydrates with at least 9 servings of fruits and vegetables. Dietary adherence was monitored. The primary outcome was liver fat assessed via and controlled via the attenuation parameter. The secondary outcomes were liver fibrosis assessed using a FibroScan and liver enzyme levels, right? The ALT and the AST and the GGT, anthropometrics, markers of inflammation, which I loved the CRP in the CRP addition to this one as well, right?
Yeah.
And because we know higher levels of CRP, less effective fat burning due to the blocking of the leptin signals and the insulin effectiveness getting to your brain, telling your brain to burn fat. And then they looked at total antioxidant capacity, fasting blood glucose, fasting insulin, insulin resistance, which was not just like a blood test. It was actually using the gold standard HOMA IR and looking at blood lipids, Tommy. So let's go over some of the results.
Wow. I love the design of this because when I talk to any of my friends or family and they talk about something being off in their blood work.
First two rules of fasting. What are you doing?
Yeah, we're not even talking about fasting. But if they say, oh man, I got my blood work back and I got some elevated triglycerides, or maybe they actually say some elevated liver enzymes, which is more rare because like we know 36% of Americans actually have this, but most don't understand that they have it because it's not being actually like diagnosed for them. But when they talk about having some elevated enzymes or triglycerides or cholesterol or something like that, most of these are 1980s or 1970s or 1960s models. Then they immediately go to, I need to reduce the fat in my diet. They almost never say, I need to cut out some sugar in my diet. And the cool thing about this study is it's going to directly compare that, which I really like.
So it's interesting. You might be thinking, who the heck would, you know, who talks about that stuff? Well, with your background, Tommy,
we do.
And you do. You literally do.
Yeah, right.
First time we hung out, forced intervention by the wives. stuff like this came up. I can attest to it. So
right.
The cool thing here is that the intervention and control groups were isocaloric, meaning they ate the same amount of calories. Okay. Mm. Based on the reports, the intervention and control groups decreased their energy intake by 198 and 153 kilocalories per day, respectively, compared to the baseline. Mm-hmm. So the energy intake in both groups was statistically significant compared to the baseline, but there was no difference in energy intake between the groups. Mm-hmm. And the fat mass compared to baseline, right? So the intervention group decreased body weight and fat mass from 83 to 80 kilograms and 26 to 24 kilograms in the control. Additionally, compared to the control, the intervention decreased liver fat and liver fibrosis scores and improved or reduced all levels of liver enzymes.
Nice.
Here's a kicker. The control increased fat mass and decreased lean body mass.
Ouch.
In 12 weeks.
12 weeks. You're talking about a fourth of the year here. And left to my own devices, when my liver already doesn't look great, I already have some elevated enzymes, it doesn't take long to continue to move in the wrong direction. That's scary.
Yeah. Accelerant right there.
Yeah. That's where I was. That's what I was seeing in my blood work. But yep. On a year-to-year basis, you don't have to go very long to see that without controlling either both what I'm intaking or the timing of what I'm intaking, it doesn't have to be, I don't have to be eating anything crazy. I don't have to be taking in just way too many calories, but my liver is suffering over time and it's getting worse.
My macros were so incredibly crazy to me that like there were days I just couldn't finish the food. And it was like one meal was like two cups or like 200, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but like 285 carbs a day. I don't remember exactly the amount, like 150, 170 grams of protein and under 100 grams of fat, like 90 grams of fat, right? It was like insane to me, but more inflamed, blood work was getting worse, feeling worse, right? So all of those things as well, but it definitely was not moving the needle. And this is 55% carbohydrate, right? So interestingly enough, when we do our food or nutrition feedback in our group, we'll ask people to, you know, put together some meals and track for a short period of time to make sure that we're not under consuming or over consuming in certain areas with the fasting schedules. There's always posts where it's like, yeah, I thought I was doing great. And then we break down and it's like the meals are 50 to 60% carbohydrates. And that's more common. If we look at the standard American diet, I mean, that's what we're talking about, right? So it's just crazy. Share a few more results here. The intervention, and I think you have some percentages on body weight as well, but I want to make sure we hit the total cholesterol numbers. So the intervention decreased triglycerides from 201 to 133.
Wow. Say that again.
200, 201.5 to 133.27.
Wow. On the triglycerides
total
in 12
cholesterol.
Weeks.
Imagine if the carbohydrate percentage was 30% and it was natural, unrefined, unprocessed carbs.
And if it wasn't an 8-hour eating window, what if it was, maybe it was a 6-hour?
Yeah, maybe a 6 or a 4, like last week's article, you were doing here.
Wow.
Are you picking up what we're putting down? So, and each of these changes were significant compared to the control. So total cholesterol went from 190 to 157 and LDL-C from 104 to 84.
Wow.
They also decreased levels of fasting blood glucose. It gets better. From 105 to 92, pre-diabetic to 9. Mm-hmm. Now, I'd like to see that 92 be 86 or 5.
Yeah.
No need to, you know, would the inventor of the Titanic say it can't be sank? Well, you got a little too close to that iceberg, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
105 to 92.
Don't stop there.
Let's not be at 92. Let's be a little farther away from the air quotes normal range of, you know, 99.
Let's get to 82.
Yeah. Oh. CRP 3.14 to 2.02. Huge.
Wow.
Huge, because CRP doesn't have a big range. Okay. Yeah. It's a small range.
30%+ reduction right there.
What? Right. And each of these changes were significant. No stinking way. Right. So the big picture here, Tommy. Do you have any more numbers we want to share before we move on?
There was also, you talked about blood glucose. Yeah, like I think you hit them all. Those are, they're incredible.
So what about the body fat? The intervention group that lost the amount of weight. So it was, despite a similar decrease in energy intake, the intervention group lost a little over 3 kilograms of body weight and about 2.5 kilograms of fat mass, while the control group gained about 1.7 kilograms of fat mass on average. The divergence was crazy in body composition, implies that there was a greater decrease in energy intake from the intervention group. And right, it's not uncommon to see that in self-reported things, but it's also very common, see what I'm doing here, to see that in fasting interventions.
Yeah.
You stop being hungry all the time. Your cravings improve. You feel better. You don't feel as ravenous. Things start to balance out. Your body is in ketosis and tapping into some of those fat stores, i.e. 2.5 kilograms of fat mass, right? And 3 kilograms of total body weight in 12 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, I love the fact that that sentence right there means they can't explain the difference based on what they were actually measuring.
Right.
This divergence implies there was a greater decrease in energy intake in the intervention group. No, they knew what the calories were. They just didn't expect to see the change in body composition to be so substantial. And that's where we can really start moving the needle in some surprising ways when we're implementing fasting correctly and we're using the superpower of actually controlling the food intake as well to like level up those fasting results too, which is why there's so much potential here. And this is incredible. But I also want to point out the fact that this was a 12-week study, because we've done episodes in the past talking about some of the major dietary, you know, restrictions or interventions or styles that can be used, like a ketogenic diet and low carb and things like that, because a lot of these things are tough to stick to long term, and that's okay. And it can also be tough to like see myself using this for a long term basis, but 12 weeks is not very long to actually set things aside to use something like this as a planned protocol, knowing that I'm going to shift gears maybe 12 weeks from now. I don't have to be doing this for life in order to actually create a healthier version of myself. And I think that's the incredibly empowering part. That's the perspective I wish I had a few years ago.
Right. And if you're a 200-pound person listening to this, right, you know, that's over 3% of your body weight. Remember, we shared that 3-5% will do it for most people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But we need to look at the liver, you know, as an important part, right? So, you know, when that's why sugar restriction is being investigated for non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. There's an association between sugar-sweetened beverage consumption, but there's also the research that showed that, you know, 29% from baked goods, pasta, and other grains, crackers, baked goods, right? Packaged foods. Yeah. 28% from fruits and other items containing fruit or fruit juice, 16% from sodas, and then 16% from sodas. So it's like, okay, we got to make sure that we know, let's reduce the sugar, but it's not the sweets and the sodas per se.
And it's not just ice cream, you know?
Yeah, right. And the idea here is that, you know, fructose may have that particularly detrimental effect on the liver because of how it's metabolized, right? It's that accelerant.
Mm-hmm.
It goes through a different process, but glucose metabolism in the liver is regulated by insulin. So if you're imbalanced in the liver fat accumulation, right? So when fatty acid uptake and the production exceeds rates of the fatty acid oxidation and export, us breathing out our fat, we literally burn, we lose our fat through our breath, right? When that's out of whack and we're looking at insulin, right? The metabolism of this glucose and fructose, well, fructose is a little bit different because it goes through that different process. But so a surplus of glucose then bypasses the liver to be metabolized by other tissues. So your liver is clogged. So now we're starting to see, and there was an article that we're going to do an episode on where it shows that insulin resistance in the skeletal muscle and what that mechanism looks like, right? So fructose independent of insulin, and not regulated by the energy status of liver. So we need to decrease the fructose, but But then to get the liver swinging that equation of oxidation in our favor, well, let's just decrease the insulin or energy intake overall.
Yeah.
And let our liver come up frayer, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that's where fasting is so stinking powerful. You don't have to completely remove carbohydrates. You don't have to demonize food groups. You don't have to, we're going to say limit, because you will accelerate that process because carbohydrates, you know, have the highest insulin and blood sugar response, right? But it doesn't have to be a one size fits all approach.
Yeah.
Fasting, however, can apply to any and all situations when applied properly.
Yeah, you also don't have to eat like a rabbit whenever you do break your fast in order to move the needle here. We need to leverage the time component because time is the, besides your actual macronutrient, time is your big lever here. And I would argue that it's probably a slightly bigger lever than the intake, the macronutrient profile. So what that means is we have to get better at leveraging the time component and not just being concerned that I'm not eating the perfect food when I do break my fast. I need to get better and more consistent with my fasting and then add this on top, you know, a little bit of control and delaying, but not complete, you know, restriction or omission of some of my favorite foods, you know, and then now I can start seeing the needle move. I can see the blood work start to improve. Even if it wasn't diagnosed, like if I go back 5 years and I look at my ALT and my AST and my GGT, and they're all ticking up, they're in the yellow or sometimes in the red zone, but I never had any insight into that. But if I knew it was going to move the needle, if I just like skipped breakfast consistently and stopped eating past maybe like 8 p.m. or something, and actually like time restricted that, I would have been all over it. But I never knew the concrete connection there. So I think that's huge.
You know, looking at the reduction here too, you know, looking at, so just trying to apply it to real life, right? Because what you're talking about there is real life, right? And especially for women, especially, you know, under 40 childbearing years, you need healthy carbohydrates leading up to your cycle because progesterone is fueled by those, right? So like, that's where the cravings, so low carb, yes, it is so powerful in this instance, right? Decreasing the sugar, even though their carbohydrate intake was still 55%. You know, the reduction in real life, the intervention group reduced sugar and fructose intake from 139 to 101 and then 24 to 4. So fructose 24 to 4 and sugar 139 to 101. I mean, that's a lot of sugar. So imagine if we like cut those numbers, the sugar number in half.
Yeah.
It's just incredible that like the application of this can fit any, no matter where you are on the spectrum, right? And there's, we can just keep going, right? The studies that show that diabetes, you know, in low carb adherence at the 2 year mark was worse than it was at the origination date. It was good at 6 to 12 months, but then 18 to 24 months, the wheels fell off.
Because they were thinking about it as a lifelong, as a long-term, you know, kind of thing, not a rotational intervention.
Right. And so the takeaway here is, well, how do you do this? Well, put a little bit of intentionality into your plan, right? You need to have a guide. Well, you got a blueprint to fat loss.
Right. Start there.
Right. The blueprint to fasting for fat loss. Start there. It has everything in there you need. It's got a little bit of science, a little bit of application, how to ramp up your windows, how to choose your window, right? Yeah. We have our one meal a day guide already, but this is going to be more of a comprehensive blueprint, right? Mm-hmm. And then start doing those things today. Make a different decision when your next nutrition opportunity. Set your timer. Be consistent, right? So you really want to, we use the word accelerant or accelerate that process. Then we're going to recommend you hop in this kickoff event for this year. The first 7-day fasting lifestyle challenge coming up as well, Tommy. So grab the guide. Pick one or two things that you're going to do today. Don't pretend. Don't think about it in the future. No, now, today.
Don't push it off. Yeah.
One actionable thing you can do. Accelerate that process. And then go check out the link for the 7-day fasting lifestyle challenge that is coming up on February 1st. And yes, we waited for the holiday hangover to take place. and the New Year's resolutions to wear off, because now we are focused and we're going to start the month fresh. Doesn't matter the month, doesn't matter the day. It's the decision that you make in the moment to start. And that's what we're going to do along with you, Tommy. So go ahead.
With the challenge not in January, it doesn't have to be about a New Year's resolution, you know?
Exactly.
Like, no. It's February. Forget about, you know, that the silly stuff, that the flash in the pan stuff, right? But this is all about getting a little bit outside of your comfort zone, right? And having the support and the feedback and the structure that can really help push and accelerate the process. So we're all about moving that momentum in the right direction. So it's going to be really cool. So super excited to see everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Head to the show notes, download the blueprint to fasting for fat loss. Check out the link for more information, dates and times for the 7-day fasting lifestyle challenge coming up on February 1st. Tommy, as always, sir, thank you for the conversation. Hugely, man, I'm so fired up about this one. I just want to keep going, but we'll get it in the episode, right? So thank you guys for listening again.
Yeah.
Thank you all for just the amazing, you know, just continued support as, you know, with the downloads and the weekly listens and the reviews. We just, we are so appreciative that you guys have chosen us to be part of your fasting journey. So grateful. Love and appreciate you all for listening. Tommy, as always, sir, talk soon.
Thank you. Bye.
So, you've heard today's episode, and you may be wondering, where do I start? Head on over to thefastingforlife.com and sign up for our newsletter, where you'll receive fasting tips and strategies to maximize results and fit fasting into your day-to-day life.
While you're there, download your free Fast Start Guide to get started today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Fasting for Life.